What has it been like trying to balance this? My perspective is that that's a constantly moving target, and it's never a one size fits all.
It's still a struggle, right? I think there's different ways to handle this. The way that I've tried to handle it is.
And I'm Forrest.
Welcome to Concrete Conversations, a construction podcast to help the average Joe be a little less meh.
Today we've got Dan Bigman with Bigman Geophysical and Learn GPR and probably half a dozen other companies that he started who's going to be joining us. And so thank you, Dan, very much for being here with us.
My pleasure.
So Dan Bigman, you've got a great name in the industry. You do a lot of cool stuff, but we want to understand a little bit more about how you got here. It seems like you've just kind of got everything figured out, and all of us have Bigman envy. And so we want to understand a little bit better about like where you started this idea of starting a business like Bigman Geophysical and Learn GPR. Maybe what those companies are. Can you take us back a few steps, like a decade or two, whatever the case may be?
Yeah, I mean, I have nothing figured out, and I'm still looking at you guys and saying, what are you guys doing right that I'm not doing right? One thing I think that I got figured out going way back, right, and I think it's important in any industry, is obviously like persistence and just making sure that you keep pushing along. If you have something that you like doing and you think that there's a need for it, then just, you know, don't stop, right? I mean, that's it. Just like kind of keep pushing forward. And it's basically what I've done. And it's kind of been throughout a bunch of transitions throughout my life. I certainly didn't start in the remote sensing and non-destructive testing and ground penetrating radar space. I started in a sales position in the financial industry. And so it was nothing remotely related to this. This was, you know, I kind of opted to not go to college at first, and then, you know, decided sort of, well, actually, I didn't go to college, met a amazing woman who did go to college, had a degree in neuroscience, looked around and thought I was really dumb. How am I going to talk to this girl? And so I went back to school, so I wasn't so dumb. And joke was on her, I ended up going to school for 10 years. So, you know, basically, I went back, didn't know what I was going to do, and showed up in this course one day with this. It was an archaeology and anthropology course. Professor was Professor Byland. Bruce Byland was his name. And I came home one day, and I said to my wife, Kathy, I said, I want to do what this guy does. And so I ended up, you know, just getting interested in what I got interested in, which was archaeology and anthropology at first. And went to graduate school, moved to the South. I was from New York originally, moved to the South, went to University of Georgia. No idea what geophysics was, but my advisor suggested I take a course in geophysics. And then I came back and I was like, honey, I'm doing what this guy does. And, you know, and it kind of just, you know, evolved. And I was really influenced by some amazing, professors. Geophysics guy in University of Georgia was Dr. Hammond was his... was a main kind of geophysics guy. My advisor was Steve Kovaleski. But, you know, basically I just kept learning these things that I was interested in. I was like amazed that I could, in a career, keep learning and applying what I'm learning to continue to push myself forward, right? And so I ended up getting into archaeological geophysics. After graduate school, I taught at university for 2 years, really enjoyed teaching. And when that contract was up, at Georgia State, basically, we decided we didn't want to leave the South. Certainly wasn't moving to Cal. No, I'm just kidding. we loved it down here, right? We loved it here. My kids were born here, and we wanted to stay. So I ended up just, you know, starting a business. And luckily, I had some experience in sales for 5 years prior to going back to school, which I was able to parlay into trying to, you know, go knock on a bunch of doors, basically, and go find some clients, right? And so that's what I did. And yeah.
That's fantastic, Dan. That's exactly what we're hoping to be able to get out of this podcast, is just ways for, like, really practical advice for guys who are maybe new in their industry, or maybe just wanting to make a change in their career, in terms of how to do that. And your advice there about just kind of having some stick-with-itness, having some resourcefulness when it comes to figuring out what to do. And even I loved what you said about your wife and just feeling intimidated by her, or maybe motivated by her, by her presence to go and impress and go and measure up. I think that's fantastic. So, and everybody should just go and connect with you on LinkedIn. You're always creating some really fantastic content. You've got a YouTube channel. What other social media things are you doing out there?
I mean, most of them, right? You know, this is something that's evolved also over time. But I'll kind of link that in, right, to the story is when I started the company, right, this is 2015. Basically, they walk into my office and they're like, yeah, your contract's up. There are no other contracts. That was it. And we decided, okay, stay and go into business. And I definitely had like sales chops, but like when I was selling, there was no Facebook. Right. There was no LinkedIn. There was no YouTube. Right.
This is like the late 70s. Right.
You're being generous. Right. This is like the 50s. OK. You know, so my sales job was encyclopedias, you know, door to door. But, you know, there really was none of this digital sort of marketing the way that it is now. And so one of the things that I had to do was continue learning. Right. And so I came out, I learned and I basically, you know, started on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter and LinkedIn and then YouTube, and I just like kept putting stuff out, and I just felt like if I can create things that were helpful to people, that that would ultimately help me. And I was blown away, you know, coming from academia, I didn't realize how little information there was out there for people who actually use the technologies, you know, that we typically use, electromagnetics, radar, magnetics, and others. There's so little information out there for people. So I started to just like create little videos, you know, just talking on these different little points. Cause I felt like there was a little bit of this gate, you know, up between, well, to get sort of access to the geophysics, you really had to kind of go to university, when in reality, like most people using this stuff did not, if they went to school, did not go to school for this. Right. I mean, you happen to go to school for geology, right, geoscience stuff, but I would say a lot of the people in our industry did not, you know, go to school for that. Certainly a lot of technicians out there in the field on the side of the road, locating utilities or on hands and knees, right, didn't necessarily have this kind of background where geoscience was kind of a core part of it. And so I just started to put that stuff out, but I had to learn that. And I went back to Georgia State and did a guest lecture, right, for one of the professors over there. And I mean, great person, but it's funny. They were like, "Well, how did you think?" This was like maybe a year in, and I wasn't out of business yet, right? I'm not going to say I was successful at that point, but I wasn't out of business yet. Eaten in 6 days, but you know, still was pushing through.
Sure.
And they were like, "How'd you learn to like, you know, grow a business, a small business?" And that I was like, same thing I did for a PhD, right? Same thing I did for my bachelor's. I read a bunch of books. Tested it, saw what worked and what didn't, right? Read some more books, tested it, you know, and just and kept active. And so I think it's something that a lot of people can do in both building a business, or if you're interested in just being a great professional in sort of the non-destructive testing or remote sensing or utility locating space, it's like keep learning, right? Like I didn't know that. I knew how to learn. And so I just kept reading books, didn't understand it all. Tried stuff out. Some stuff got views, some didn't. Some gained followers, some didn't. And I just tried to continue to like leverage that stuff and push it out. And then you get this like feedback, right? Where you're learning, trying, learning from what you tried, learn some more information and content, try it, see what works, what didn't, feedback loop back into you. And that's what I did. And like I was able to do enough fast enough where I never, at least till yet, went out of business, right?
Yeah.
And so that's kind of that's how it kind of came along.
That's fantastic. You know, that's something that I've always really admired about you and really been just flabbergasted by is that it's not very common to have scientific acumen with business acumen and sales acumen and be a content creator, all of that crammed into one brain. And and you're somehow doing it, and I still don't know how, but you are all those things. You're a scientist, you're a content creator, you're a salesman, you're a business owner, and it's a really impressive thing that you've created here. And it's always, I've always been very envious of what you've been able to do here. That's pretty cool.
I appreciate that. And likewise, I think it's a lot, right? And I think that I'm certainly not the best at time management, but I don't know. I just try to like keep going, keep busy. It's very simple, I think, for myself, certainly, to like fall down the rabbit hole of, all right, I'm going to go learn this thing. But then like 3 hours later, I was watching videos on everything but that thing. And now I don't even know where the 3 hours went, you know, and my kids are not in bed yet and it's 11:30 at night. So that becomes like a problem, right? But I try, you know, to keep learning and you know, it kind of, I think, loops in where, you know, this was basically the way that I did this. I certainly know more now about, let's say, ground penetrating radar than I did coming out of graduate school, right? Like a lot more. And part of that was going back to the stuff I'd learned, relearning it and expanding on that education for the purposes of making video, right? Because when you teach somebody, you learn it better. And so, you know, what I would do is I'd basically be like, all right, this concepts I went over in the past, I'm going to go relearn it good enough where I can create a video on it, right? And then that reinforce it. Now I'll put that into a course and go ahead and continue to teach people on this thing because a lot of folks don't even know where to get, like, the foundational information, right? So one thing benefit right. I have was coming through school, it's where do you access this stuff? And then how do you take it from, like, a scientific writing or journal work or dense textbook and make a 5-minute video that's actually understandable by people, excuse me, but I'm still learning, right? And I'm still trying to sort of get better and feed that back in. So if I can keep learning and continue to grow myself, continue to make sure that our team members are growing themselves, then we can feed that back into marketing, right? Because we have more content, and then we can feed that into a product, which could be course is one, but being able to consult and offer things that other people are unwilling to learn on their own, and maybe it's not the best use of their time, right? But to be able to offer that stuff as special, you know, as a expertise of things that we've now done that others haven't, I think is important, right? And so that's how I try to, you know, make it efficient. It's not always that way, but that's kind of the way that I envisioned it. Was that the better I got, the easier it is to create information for people. And then, you know, the easier it is to say, hey, we have all these skill sets that not a lot of other people have that we're willing to do for you. By the way, just charge your customer for our time, you know, and try to make it really simple for people to say, hey, it's worth collaborating with us because, you know, we have different ways we can help you, right? I can help you by watching, you can watch a 5-minute YouTube video. I can help you by you doing a 2-day, you know, technical workshop with us, or I can help you with doing this other stuff that's out of your comfort zone after the fact. And so that's how I kind of try to make this loop. But I think that it also translated into being a valuable way to build a business. And I think that's true for anybody, right? Because if you take, you know, across anything, it doesn't have to be just in remote sensing, right? If you have folks that are in construction, you're always going to benefit from learning more. So, all right, I'm going to now learn more about construction, maybe some specialty aspect of building that maybe a bunch of my competitors don't know. Now I'm going to create something about the value of this, right, and be able to put that out through a content, you know, outlet that's I'm going to then target at the customer base, not necessarily my competitors, but at a customer base, and let them know that this stuff is available because they may not know it or don't understand it or don't understand the value of it if they do have heard about it. So I'm going to make sure that I do all that. It's just helpful to them for understanding because that's people who are looking to add, you know, a value into their business at the end user. But then now you become this sort of expert or one of a few people who really get it. And as you tie that back in, you'll be able to grab that work that others won't. And if others are doing sort of the typical standard, even if you're coming in as a specialist, you know, you have this stuff and you're reinforced by generating good information for people, it will come back, right? It often is a slow process, but it does kind of snowball. There is exponential growth to that. And so I think it works out in any case, right? And then when you're on site and you're doing it, you're learning every time you do that kind of specialty project more, because if somebody doesn't try to access that part of this industry, you know, for a couple of years, by the time they even engage with it, you're already so far ahead that it's going to be very tough to integrate and catch up, right? You're already looking at the next thing you're going to specialize in and integrate in and all that. And that may be a specialty, or it may be an efficiency, or it may be, you know, a safety thing, you know, whatever it is. But I think, you know, too many people sort of think that the learning ends, you know, and we see this all the time. And it just, from my standpoint, it never ends, no matter how good you are, no matter how much you've learned. It never ends. And we're learning now, and like, I'm constantly... you know, still reading and sending this stuff to our team, and then making them go through it. It's funny. I have a guy who works with me, Bobby, and I'm constantly on, you know, next to his computer with him, and we're going through things, and I'm making him write out like equations and plugging in numbers and values to get like wavelengths, and how does that then apply to how much spacing should the GPR be, or what's the wavelength, or what's the size of the object that you can confidently see, and all this. And like, I keep trying to make them do that because it's reinforcement for me. And then I'm taking things that recently and plugging those applications into things that I already knew but haven't, you know, used. And so it's just, it just never stops. And people who think that the education stops are, I think, the people who are going to just, they're going to be in a different job or a different company at some point in the near future. And the people who continue to learn in whatever aspect that is, business, construction, non-destructive testing, you know, any of that stuff, marketing, and sales, I think you rarely waste your time learning.
Yeah, it sounds like that's key, that continual learning to get yourself prepared for what's coming in the future. Now, I feel like we maybe skipped over this because Forrest knows you pretty well. What can you just tell for our listeners what it is exactly that your business does?
Yeah, so our business provides training and support solutions for other businesses that are doing utility locating, concrete scanning, and other non-destructive testing applications. Primarily, we're working with engineers and construction contractors, but we're also working with government agencies, private and public utilities, and scientists of sort of other stripes. So that's basically what we do. Kind of the set of solutions that we offer include technical training workshops, both public and private. And then we also offer like equipment, calibration, maintenance, and rentals. And then we also offer data processing, analysis, and deliverable preparation. You know, we're always looking out for other ways that we can add value. Trying to figure things out that we can help other people not have to figure out, right? Just sort that's of, great. Here you go, right? We can sort of help you do things. So that's kind of the range of what we offer.
Yeah.
That's a good range. Thank you for that.
It is.
What do you, now, are you still a service provider also? Do you still actually go out and perform non-destructive testing services or ground penetrating radar investigations? Is this something you that's still a part of your business, or have you moved entirely to supporting other businesses as they do that work?
So most of the field work that we actually do, the projects that we engage with, are collaborative with our customer base, right? So they have something that is a little bit uncomfortable for them, and we're making sure that they have a successful project. If the project success, you know, can be successful. Sometimes it also means us saying, there is a small probability that this is going to be successful, and make sure you relay that limited probability to your customer and let them make the decision. But most of that work is collaborative with our customer base. A little bit, I would say like 98%, right? 2% is specialty projects that people seek us out for, that are sort of really unique, or they've gone to three or four other providers and haven't found somebody who's willing to take a stab at it, and we'll present them with a solution that may or may not work. but that will be like, you know, 2% will be specialty projects, primarily large scale, logistically difficult, complicated projects that may be inside the U.S., but may be in the middle of the desert somewhere in some other part of the world, right? So, like, there's a limited set. The reason that I think it's important to make sure that we still keep a very small piece that allows us to do, you know, complex, logistically difficult, specialty type of work is we want to make sure that we're continually getting better, right? Not just through the education piece, but there's formal education and then there's experiential education. And, you know, we get a lot of that experiential education through working with our customer base. But then we also want to make sure that we're continuing to lead the field and doing projects that we think are maybe difficult to, or impossible to do, but try it. And if we figure out a solution, have that solution available to other people if they run into a similar situation. You know, it's interesting. I probably get this from my father, who is a physician, but also a business owner too. And, you know, till this day, the guy is 70 years old. He's still clinical as a doctor, you know, 1 or 1.5 days a week. And I think it's because, number one, he loves it, right? And that's part of why we still do that piece. But number two is I think it's hard to tell somebody what to do if you're so far removed, right, from being an actual practitioner. Like, I want to make sure that our team members know what it's like in the Georgia heat when their electronics aren't working and you can't, you know, satisfy a scope. And to be able to have that, you know, compassion and empathy, or, you know, or whatever that is for our customers, for the Forrest Sims of the world, when they're out on a project and they're struggling and they call us for help, I want to make sure that our people can you know, talk to you from a place of actual experience, not just like, hey, I got a compassionate heart. I want them to be like, hey, we did this on this other time, and this was a similar situation, and here's how we handle it. It may not work, but we're here to try to work you through this, through actual troubleshooting in the field. Because that's a lot of what we do, right? And one of our trainers, Paige, always says all the time, is like, being out in the field, he goes, your job is to be, you know, is to troubleshoot. And hopefully that you troubleshoot enough, basically, where you come out through a success. But we want to make sure that we've gone through those issues and have troubleshot them ourselves, as opposed to, hey, we heard from somebody one time, you know, that had this problem, what they did. We do that, right? We use the interactions that we create with people to help other customers, but we want to make sure that we have that real world experience to help them troubleshoot in the field. So we still want to make sure that we have that piece, you know, as part of what we do that separates us from others. I mean, there's a lot of other trainers out there who don't go to the field, and that's okay. But you know, a year from now, 2 years from now, 5 years, 10 years from now, it gets more and more difficult, I think, to be able to engage in a real way with what people are actually going through when they're doing a locate, when they're doing a scan, you know, or in some of these other applications like archaeology. We want to make sure, you know, or environmental or geotechnical, right? We want to make sure if, you know, enhanced scanning or other folks like, you know, like that, are on a project that is a little bit outside their realm. You know, maybe you guys come across an environmental project where you're asked to map a contamination spill. And you say, hey, can you guys help me? You know, we'll tell you what our legitimate experience, because we've done that, right? We'll tell you what that experience is, and we'll offer you what we can, but not just from a, hey, we've read 100 papers on it, which we have, but we've also applied those 100 papers, you know, what we learned from there to actual examples. And here's what we learned from. We're not total experts in that, right? And we'll be honest with it. But it is something that we've learned a lot about and that we've experienced and that we've, you know, presented at scientific conferences on and have gotten, you know, feedback on. And we want to be able to present that real world stuff, you know, to you guys when you come across that project, because if you have it, you should keep it. And we want to make sure that people, you know, can expand the value of their company to their customer base when new situations come up. So that's why we kind of, I know it's a long-winded answer to it, but, you know, that's why we do it.
So, Dan, you guys are located in Georgia. Forrest and I are here in California. I know you've helped Forrest a lot with jobs that he's come across over the years. Where else in the world do you help people? Are you mostly just in the United States, or you're all over the world?
I mean, we worked in a lot of the world. We'll work anywhere if the project's cool. But... So we're primarily working in the United States. by just being in Atlanta, you know, or just outside of Atlanta. I would say the portion of our work is in the Southeast, but we've certainly worked all over the country. I mean, we've probably either done training or supported somebody's project. I don't know, at least 40 states. I mean, I can name a handful, maybe at least 35 states, you know, but so most. And then we worked abroad. We've conducted trainings in Australia, New Zealand, Singapore, you know, countries in Iraq, Kuwait, Saudi Arabia. We've been in quite a few. Mexico, obviously, Canada. We've trained in Europe in a few countries. And then we've done, you know, work on a variety of different applications in the Middle East, in Asia, you know, and then from back end supported projects, you know, all over. I mean, working on projects now in Australia. And so we'll work with people anywhere. You know, we want to help folks as much as we can. One of our goals, our initiatives for next year is to make sure that we have more public trainings available. Up until COVID, really through about 2020, we were still doing public training events, workshops, kind of all over. You know, we did like one or two a year in California, one or two a year in the Northeast. You did one or two a year in like Texas and then the Midwest. Maybe like one a year in Canada. You know, all public, right? So anybody around can access them. It kind of fell off a little bit as we went through expansion in the company, but we're at a good place now. And we have a goal of, which starting now, is to do a lot more public training, you know, available. And so we'll do more all over the country through the rest of this year and certainly into 2024 and beyond. You know, it's not just the people in Georgia that need help. You know? So,
yeah.
So we're going to try to make what we have, because that was one of the big things when I did it, is I said, what if there isn't enough education out there? Obviously, online is a really simple answer, but I also think it's a really it allows us to kind of rest on our laurels a little bit, you know, and just, well, then create more online. But what we do, a lot of people do want that hands on, like they want it. You want to walk them through their machinery, their instruments. I'll use the right term, their instrumentation. Right? They want you to sort of help them troubleshoot in real time. They want to get this hands-on experience. I mean, that's what you don't get with the online piece, right? Is the actual like educational experience from an in-person with the technology, and I want to make sure that people have that. So when I did, I said I want to make it consumable and accessible to people. So I want the information to be something that, you know, the new field tech on the side of the road can get something out of, and we want to make sure that it's easy enough for them to do it. And so we do private trainings. We float all over the place, but not everybody can grab a private training. It just cost wise, right? And so we're going to do a lot more public ones so people can get in there. I want to make it available. I want there to be no excuses. I want it to be, if somebody doesn't get educated, that's completely on them. It's not that they couldn't come to Atlanta or the content was too hard or this or that. It's like, nope, it was you who didn't get educated. We were in your backyard for a reasonable price with excellent training. You're worse than your competitors.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That everybody needs to hear that type of thing. Is that if you don't have an opportunity, or if you aren't taking the opportunity to get trained, it's on you. It's not because the opportunity is not there, and that's great. And I think that's something you guys have done extremely well, and that's fantastic. I really admire you guys for it. I had a question about the kind of taking this whole thing and turning it a little bit here. You're talking about all these countries you've been to, all these states in the U.S., all this travel, and you're a family man too. You've got a wife and kids. What has it been like trying to balance this? My perspective is that that's a constantly moving target, and it's never a one size fits all, every family, every situation, or even every project. It always works the same. So how have you found a balance in your family and work life with how much travel you have?
Yeah, I mean, it's still a struggle, right? I think there's different ways to handle this. The way that I've tried to handle it is, I've tried to to more and more limit the number of consecutive days I'm gone, when I'm gone. And that was an internal discussion. Try the best that we can to make that happen, you know, and it hasn't been easy. And so that's been one way. The other way is, if I'm going to go away for an extended period of time, I do try to take my family with me. That's happened more pre-COVID and been a little more difficult post-COVID, because when we were really able to start traveling in, my kids had gotten older, and harder to take a kid out of high school than it is to take a kid out of elementary school. There's just a lot more that they miss in 2 weeks. I can teach them the shapes and the colors when we're on the road, when they're in elementary school, but my kids are taking courses that I never, in high school, that I never took. It's very, very difficult, to try to keep up and to help them. So it's a struggle, but we've tried to take a time away together, or if my kids can't come, we try to get somebody to watch them. I mean, I did a training in Italy last year, and I took my wife for, you know, like 5 days before the training, and we, you know, had a 5-day vacation between the two of us before I, you know, went and did the training for 3 days or whatever it was. And so we tried to incorporate that, but I think what you guys are doing is great. I mean, another way, which I haven't mastered yet, and you know, I'd love to hear how you guys kind of came up with this, is you guys obviously part of owning a business, and it, you could own a business, not travel, it still could feel like you're away. And that gets really difficult, right? And so I think maybe incorporating folks together is interesting. I mean, one thing I've tried to do, my son, who's getting older now and has started a company while he's in high school, we go to like networking events together, you know? And So he's pretty mature, you know, for his age, when it comes to this kind of stuff. His siblings may say different, but when it comes to this, right, he actually finds really cool events, and he's like, hey, can we go to this together? And I'm like, I would not do as much networking as I do if it wasn't for him, right? So as they get older, it kind of changes a little bit, and that's been a cool way to bond with my son, is to go to some of these networking events together where he's interested in meeting people and, various things. And so that's kind of kept me out there, but not just alone, right? You know, with him. And so that's been an interesting thing. But yeah, I mean, how have you guys sort of kind of stumbled into adding a layer, you know, to what you got, what Forrest had been doing by doing this together?
Yeah, I think it's a moving target that we keep trying to balance. I see what you're saying. With sometimes there are days when Forrest is, it feels like he's away, even though he's just in his office, because he's not as present with the family, just because there's so many things going on. And I think you're right, like trying to look for opportunities to bring your wife to an event, bring your son to an event. That's a really smart way of going about that. And now that Forrest and I are doing this together, we're working more, even more together. So we're able to be more included in each other's day-to-day and helping each other.
It's been a really important thing for us in our relationship, just to, Ari and I were talking about this the other day, just in communicating a lot between the two of us. And our ability to communicate, especially on difficult topics or even topics of contention, that's evolved over time. That's gotten easier to now. I mean, we've been married, we just celebrated our 17th anniversary, and we have, we've learned how to communicate well enough that we feel like, okay, well, it feels like the next natural step here is to start a podcast together. So here we are. So we're doing this, but it's a constant struggle trying to make sure that, that we're there for our kids. In fact, earlier this summer, or maybe it was the end of last school year or something, Arian, I don't recall when, but recently our oldest, Alex, he mentioned to Arian while the two of them were out, he mentioned that, yeah, I basically never see Dad. And that really hurt for me, because I felt like I saw him all the time. I mean, I'm here in my home office. I've got guys out in the field who are doing the field work, but I try to make sure that I'm there for dinners and meals. And, you know, we often do things together on the weekends. We go to church on Sunday. We do some things together as families on Saturday. My perception is that we're doing things together as a family. I'm seeing him. I'm doing things together. His perception was not, though. If we kept moving forward the way that we were, he was going to look back at the stage of his life and think, Dad was never around. I'll look back at this stage of his life and think, I was around. And so regardless of what my perception was, he wasn't seeing me as being present. So I started to get up. He's an amazing kid. He started getting up of his own accord, like 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning, halfway through the summer, because he decided he wanted to go bike riding. And in Southern California, you don't go bike riding in the middle of the day. That's a good way to get a heat stroke. So the only reasonable time to do that is before the sun comes up. So he started doing that, and within a few days, I realized, this is it. This is where I need to be present as a dad. So I started getting up with him in the morning, and now we go on bike rides every morning, and it's phenomenal.
Well, it's amazing, right? Like how two people, by not talking to each other, have very different perspectives on the same situation.
Yeah. Yeah,
and how, exactly. Like, unless you communicate, and I struggle with this all the time. I think most people do to some degree, but how if we just ask people questions more, or, you know, kind of have these conversations, because you want to be present, and you're happy to do whatever it takes to make sure you're present as much as you can as a business owner, right? Because second piece I want to point out. But if you know it, you want to do what you can to engage with him. But if you think like, hey, I'm around, you know, and I work out of the house, and maybe your father worked in an office somewhere. Mine certainly did, and worked a lot of hours every day, you know, and so, but we could have very different perspectives on it. But versus, oh, well, I don't even work out in an office. I work in the field some days, but I'm home a lot of days. You just have these different perspectives on it. And, you know, just unlocking that one question of, you know, is it awesome that I'm around? No, you're not, or whatever, however it came down, right? And just seeing where there's like the miscommunication just helps so much. But it does bring another point, right, what Sharian said, which is that you're working and you're home and you're working, but it kind of feels like you're not there. And I don't know another way to... I mean, how long have you been in business now?
Almost 5 years.
Almost 5 years. Yeah.
So almost 5 years, and... there's no other way, you know, to make it 5 years. You know, I at least for me, I haven't unlocked the, I can like set something up and sit back and chill. I don't think many people have. I think there's, you know, and so I think what you're doing and what I'm doing, which is working really hard, is the only way that you survive 5 years, right? And
there's no other way around that. If you want to survive longer than the statistics say, which is what, 80% fail in the first 5 years, and 80% of those fail in the next 5 years?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the only way to do it. The only way around it is to work hard.
So we have a sample of two, you and me, and we've worked hard, and we've made it 5 years, right? So
obviously.
That's it. We've got to get a couple more samples. But it's difficult, and I think that it's not for everybody, and I think that's okay, and I think you can... Because, look, you have employees that work for with you. I have employees that work teammates, right, you know, that work with me. And I see people here, too, who are like, man, I'm happy that I'm not doing that. Because they also see that. Yeah. I'd love to jump into a project so, you know, often, but I can't because there's admin or there's whatever, right? And so it's not for everybody, and that's okay, too, right? Everybody has to play different roles to make these companies successful. Because I think what we do has real impact in society, right? I don't think that what we do kind of is just, yeah, we have a business and it helps and this and that. Like, what you do is protect people on job sites, right? Yeah. You protect kids in communities because you're out there actually locating where this stuff is so it doesn't get damaged and it doesn't blow up and people don't get electrocuted and buildings don't get their, you know, their structural integrity compromised because they're not hitting PT cables or whatever it is. Like, that has real value in people's daily lives. And the way to do that right is to work hard, right? The way for me to help you and many, many others, right, be fortunate to help, you know, would have trained 1,000+ companies at this point, is because I work really hard. There's no other way, I think, around it, but we have people who are really good. And that doesn't mean, by the way, that people have to work 100 hours a week. I mean, that's not what I'm saying, right? But to be able to put in the hours, enough hours, and work while you're working is important. And maybe that's 40, maybe it's 50, maybe it's 60, whatever. And it oscillates for me, for sure. Like, there are some weeks that I'm working, you know, definitely like 30 to 40 hours for that week. It happens because I might have been away a lot for a few weeks. But during those weeks, I might be 80 hours, you know. And so it oscillates. And that's tough. A lot of people need a schedule. But to get to 5 years plus, I think a part of that is that. And, you know, if you have this, you know, if you're in business and you want to be in business, you want to continue to be successful, I don't know another way. But figuring things out, like, okay, let's start a podcast together. Or, hey, honey, I know I'm away a lot, but how about this year, like, when I go do this cool thing, I take you with me, and we can have 5 days going to Venice and Rome and, you know, and whatever before I train, right? Is integrating them into the hard work, I think, is a really... It is a good way to do it, which we've done differently, but obviously have found various paths.
Well, so what's the, we've talked about what has happened and where Bigman Geo, Dan Bigman and the Bigman family are now. What's down the line here? Is this going to be a generational thing? Is one of your kids going to take over Bigman Geo? Are you going to be selling in the next 2 years? Do you want to make an announcement right now, or are you just buying island in the Bahamas? I mean,
are you buying, or?
No, I'm not buying. You're selling your company to somebody else, an island in the Bahamas and just retiring. Right.
Yeah, that's probably not happening. In the next couple of years. I don't know. I mean, look, if my kids wanted to do this, then that would be... cool, right? Obviously, I'd be open to that. I don't know if any of them want to do this, although my youngest told me that he does want to go on an adventure in Antarctica and do GPR with me. So I'm going to probably try to make a trip to Antarctica at some point to do some GPR research.
Just like a quick one over the weekend.
Just a quick one.
Are people doing GPR work down in Antarctica? Is that something that's the scientists are using down there?
Yeah, so a lot of the work down there... at least what I've read, a lot of that's measuring thicknesses of glaciers, right? And they're using that those data to make sort of inferences about the impact of, you know, is the world really getting hotter or not? And if it isn't, how is that impacting, you know, glaciers in Antarctica? And if those glaciers are getting shorter, which, by the way, they are, if they are getting shorter, then, you know, what kind of models can you create for how much water will be kind of released, right? So there's a lot of that stuff and others. There's quite a bit of of research down there, but that's one of the main ones, using very low frequency GPR to look very deep and to sort of evaluate, you know, glacier thicknesses. But so I don't know if it'll be,
and they're looking for like, just to be clear, what they're I wrote down a note here. What they're doing is, you said that they're in Antarctica. They're looking for glacier, like for ice sheet thickness, so they can find lost civilizations underneath that ice sheet. Is that what you said?
So basically, what I'm saying is the ice sheets.
Yeah, it's
are for, the it, cover. That's the
ancient
front
aliens
for them. Oh, find that's right. That's right. But oh, but okay, now they're coming the for you. Yeah. Now that you said it in public.
Yeah. They're well, coming. No, I mean, I said right here, it's recorded.
Years. Okay, you, 17 years, you
said
got
it. I'm quoting you. Dan Bigman said they are looking for Atlanteans underneath the ice sheet. Okay.
Correct. Yeah.
Well, that's amazing, Dan.
I look at Stargate SG-1, which I love that show.
Yeah, I loved that show when I was a kid.
And by show, I mean documentary, right?
Yeah.
That is not a...
It was on the History Channel, wasn't it?
That's right.
Sure was.
So I don't know if it'll be, but one thing, and I'll tell you, one kind of final thing is I don't know if this is what I do forever, but as my kids do get older, and I think it's hard not to consider entrepreneurship when your, you know, parents are entrepreneurs, and it's easier to see yourself in that role. I think it's much tougher if you grow up and your parents are working, you know, in an office or whatever, and doesn't mean it's out of the question. But I think it's, like, for me at least, father obviously was a doctor but owned his own practice and was an entrepreneurial guy in general. It's easy to see yourself in that because you've seen people be in business for longer than a year, right?
Mm.
And so
yeah.
It might be, it's probable, I think, that at least one or not two or three of my children end up in business. And I'd love if kind of, you know, some chapter in my life as I get older ends up being, you know, going into business with them. It's something they're interested in, right? Taking what I learned from this journey and saying, hey, I have a lot of mistakes that I made that I learned from and whatever. And, you know, maybe I can help you kind of fulfill your dream and whatever you're trying to do on topics you're interested in, whether it's, you know, agriculture, fashion, or whatever, right? You know, it's a lot of cool things that they're interested in and just trying to see if I can help them, right? You know, I'd love to be their employee if possible one day.
That's cool. That's a cool vision. I like that.
Yeah, that's really great. So, Dan, I mean, you're obviously, you've got a fantastic, I mean, educational background and really solid businesses that you have running now and a great vision for you and your family for the future. What's making you nervous about the future, about the in the industry, or does nothing in the industry bother you? All your concerns are really just centered around being a parent and raising teenagers.
I think the market will do what it does, and I think things will improve, you know, over time. You know, I wish more people were willing to be better professionals and get training, but a lot do. And I try to look at it on myself and say, well, we haven't done a good enough job promoting the message of people need more education. So it's not a lot. I mean, look, AI is, it's coming. And I think that what's important is figuring out how do you integrate it into a way that's really meaningful into your company, right? And there's all sorts of ways that it can add value. And so I think that that's important. It's less nervousness more than intrigue, I think, about various things that are coming down the line. Obviously, robotics is another really interesting one. What happens to the field tech when robotics get better? I'm not sure. You know, how does it compute the human component evolve in the process of understanding, you know, the subsurface and keeping people safe? You know, as more and more of this gets pushed onto machines. So I think that stuff is interesting. I don't think that we're going away. I think that it's going to enhance what we're trying to do and will allow us to do a lot more. But those are the things that I'm interested in. How can we improve education going forward? How do we make it more accessible to people? How do we make it more powerful and effective? That's what I'm trying to figure out. How do we help companies find good people? That's something that we've heard a lot of struggles about. How do we find good people that are already kind of know what they're doing and that don't turn over as fast as our industry turns over, folks? That's stuff that I'm really interested in. And so I don't know, this is the kind of stuff that I guess my kind of head is, my headspace is, you know, and trying to figure that out. If that makes sense. What about you? What are you nervous about?
What am I nervous about? I don't know. Like, how to do all the landscaping that I want.
David makes you nervous daily. David must make you nervous. Dave.
Oh, yeah. Dave makes me nervous every day. No. What makes me nervous is if Dave ever wants to, like, leave and start working at Wendy's or something like that.
Yeah.
Dave and Johan are... They're our employees and they're fantastic. Just really hard to even imagine anybody better suited for working with us. They're just fantastic. No, yeah. What makes me really nervous is our beehive died, so we're gonna have to get a new beehive. We've got weeds in the garden, and then like our squash isn't doing as well as I hoped it would. So I mean, you know. Just stress, man. Just stuff.
Super stressed.
We had ants in the backyard. We had some rats even that got in the backyard. We took care of those. But, you know, just all the normal stuff. Ants, squash, and rats.
Yeah. That'll make somebody nervous.
Yeah. That's the type of stuff you lose sleep over. So
yeah. When that happens in their house, that makes you excited to go to the field and get out of it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I don't have too many things in the industry that are making me really nervous right now. I'm curious about the future of a few things, like locator certification. You know, like Mike Parallak. He's a big proponent of this. We ought to have Mike on the show here sometime and chat with him. He's an interesting guy. But, you know, right now, I mean, utility locating is a highly unregulated industry. There's not much to keep just anybody from going out there and locating. And, you know, we're talking about the I'm talking about the U.S. market right now, and that's what we've mostly been chatting about. But, I mean, generally speaking, there's not a lot to keep anybody from just going and buying a couple of pieces of equipment, a few instruments, and then going and doing this thing, whether they have any experience or not. And even those who have experience, there's really no quantifying of their experience level. It's, well, how long have you been doing this? I've been doing it for 5 years. I've been doing it for 5 years too. How often do you work? Well, I do one job a week doing utility locating, and then I'm mostly doing other stuff. Well, I do four jobs a day doing utility locating. Those two five-year guys are not, they don't have the same experience level, depth of experience.
Sure.
And it's just, it would be very interesting to see if locator certification goes anywhere. There are a lot of roadblocks to that. That's one thing that I'm really interested to see.
I mean, so obviously there is a certification. It's just not required, right? So
right, there's certifications,
a set of standards, right? That people get certified on those standards, and it really is up to them to promote to the end users, to the construction companies, and to the engineering firms, and to the facility owners that there is certification out there, and they may want to make sure that whoever they're dealing with has certification. You can expand it, I think, and make a level 1, 2, 3, which is not available now, but which I think is important, and make that work. But it'll be interesting to see how it unfolds. But I think what will be important is from folks in the industry, including the end users and people like myself who actually train on this stuff and certify people, is to make sure that the folks hiring utility locators, right, for construction work, or hiring, concrete scanners for that kind of work, know that there are available trainings out there. The other thing is this, is somebody could be certified and still have no idea what they're doing, and somebody can be educated and be amazing and not have the certification. And those are two very different things, right? Education, certification are two different things. And a lot of people don't know that. And one of the things we're sort of moving to is to promote, to make sure people understand the quality of the education that our company provides, because we really stand behind that. And you also get a certification because it is, confronts the minimum standards required by NOLCA and then some. And we have support ongoing for you. After you leave, we have online support, right? But then we also have our guys here who will hold your hand through projects and things like that to make sure that everything's, working out as it's supposed to be. Because somebody can get certified too. And like you said, I do one project a week or whatever. Well, who do you call when you don't have availability, right? When you don't understand what's going on, who do you call? Well, I'm a single person out here and I just started the business. I grabbed a locator and paid for, a low-end one. Now I'm confused. Well, if you don't have somebody to call, then that's poor. That's a problem, right? And so from our standpoint, it's not just certification, but it's making sure that there's support systems out there for locators, because that's what we find nobody else offers, right? It's like making sure that you have a place that you can call to evaluate what's going on, to help you, right, hand in hand. I think education and certification are different, but also the learning and the support are different, and making sure that people, not just us, but that other folks out there are willing to support the industry, I think is really important.
Well, Dan, it's been a pleasure to have this time with you today. We're so grateful to know a little bit more about you and your company and what can help someone get to where you are. Remember to like and subscribe to this podcast as well, so that we can get other great guests on our show like Dan. And again, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you guys for having me. It was a pleasure meeting you, Arian. Boris, always nice to see you.
Always nice to see you, Dan.
And I just want to say congratulations on kicking off this podcast. I will expect to be a regular listener, and I think something like this is really important, and I just appreciate all you guys do for for the industry, and I thank you for letting me share my story.
Of course.
Well, thanks, Dan. We appreciate that. And this is this is Concrete Conversations with Forrest and Arian, and guest of Dan Bigman, signing off. We want to remind you that no other success can compensate for failure in the home. Have a great day.